So hello and welcome to Client Management B307, which covers migration to Microsoft Application Virtualization 5.0. My name is Dilip Pai. I'm the test manager of the Application Virtualization Group, and we're based out of Boston. That group of merry people you see there, those are all my compatriots, I mean, from the group. I've been with Microsoft about almost 13 years. I've spent about 4 of those on the AppV team. I've mostly worked on the server AppV product, actually, before moving to the test manager role. Before we get started, just a quick show of hands. How many of you were able to make it to the AppV 5.0 overview session yesterday? It's about a third of the audience. So if you weren't able to make it, I would strongly recommend you go back and watch the video when it becomes available. That's because in the session, Asim, he covered the core value proposition, if you will, of AppV 5.0 and the key scenarios that we have enabled and the changes we made to the product in support of those scenarios. I won't be covering any of that in much detail today, but I'll do a quick overview of the 5.0 pillars and the changes that we have made that impact migration. We'll be mainly focusing on two scenarios that we've added to the product to aid your migration, which is package conversion and client coexistence. Now, isolation is a core part of the value proposition of application virtualization. And this is obvious because this is what helps us protect the operating system from applications and applications from each other. However, and we've heard this in feedback from many of you, sometimes you do want the operating system to behave as if the application is actually installed on it. A classic example here is URL protocol handlers for, say, the mail-to protocol. It's not unreasonable to expect that a native application would like to use a virtual mail application as its default mail client. In 5.0, we've done some work to enable applications to behave like they're more integrated into the operating system. And this is through a feature called virtual application extensions. But that's actually not the only way in which we are more integrated with the platform. Our product itself has gone through changes that make it a better Windows citizen, if you will. We used to have a proprietary file system, which is now gone. We use straight NTFS. Our packaging format has changed, and we'll talk about this a little bit. So what you get is a visible file system that antivirus programs, for instance, can actually parse, so they won't freak out. This has also resulted in changes like there's no more Q drive and stuff like that, which we'll cover on the next slide. And the packaging, the file format we use now is a standards-based format, and it's going to be open and documented. So you could build tools on top of it. In 4.6, we had a feature called dynamic suite composition that enabled applications that were packaged separately to be able to connect with each other. We've taken it a little further in the 5.0 release. We have essentially designed the product from the ground up to enable applications to connect with each other. And this is through a feature called virtual application connections, as you would expect. And you have the flexibility to decide whether you want a more integrated experience or whether you want to connect a group of applications with each other so that they can see each other, or whether you want full isolation. So we give you that flexibility. The third big pillar for AppV 5.0 is management. And I want to not only stress the powerful, but we made management much easier and much more standards-based in 5.0. So all our server management is web-based, and both for all three, client, sequencer, and server, you can manage them through PowerShell. Actually, one more thing there. In management, it's not just about the changes we made to the management UX, but also to improvements, quality improvements were made to the management experience for key enterprise scenarios like RDS and VDI. So remote app, for instance, just works in 5.0. And the VDI shared cache is no longer read-only. You can update it on the fly without having to reboot any clients. So these are important quality improvements that we thought would really make 5.0 better. In 4.6, to an extent, we were fighting against the architecture to provide these scenarios. In 5.0, we have designed the product in order to be able to support them natively. So what are the key changes that you need to look out for that are going to impact your migration? First and biggest, obviously, AppFi 5.0 only supports Windows 7 and higher desktops. Now, we're aware that many of our customers are at different points in their Windows 7 migration. So we've tried to make it easy for you to stage your migration by providing a feature called client coexistence. And we'll spend a good part of this session just talking about that feature. From an infrastructure standpoint, this time around, we wanted to make sure that we gave you something that would scale out as your needs grew. So in AppFi 5.0, the publishing and management servers are stateless web servers. And you can deploy the publishing server independently of the management server. So you can keep adding publishing servers as your client, the number of your clients grow. Like I mentioned before, you can manage all three components, the server, the clients, the sequencer through PowerShell. This means that it's going to be easier for IT admins to ramp up on 5.0 management, but also it should be much more straightforward to integrate with third-party ESD solutions. We are, of course, continuing to partner with the SECM team to ensure that we give you a first-class management experience through Microsoft's primary management interface. Now, most of the biggest changes in 5.0 are actually the least visible. The 5.0 sequencer looks very much like the 4.6 SP1 sequencer, but a lot has changed under the covers. And a lot of these changes are driven from the fact that we have a new file format. The new file format, called a .appv file, is a standards-based file of format, and it's going to be open and documented, as I mentioned before. It's essentially a compressed zip file, so you could rename it to .zip and open it up in Explorer. There are a lot of other benefits that accrue from having this new file format. There's no queue drive, there's no 4 gig limit anymore on packages. And also, antivirus programs can obviously look inside. However, this does mean that 4.6 packages will no longer work on 5.0. This means that you need all new packages. Which brings us to the first of the two features we're going to talk about today, package converter. Now, we know that you have significant investments in packaging at this point. So we wanted to make sure that we made it really, really easy to carry that investment forward into 5.0. To enable that, we provided a tool called a package converter. It's a very simple tool, just has a PowerShell interface, just a couple of commandlets, in fact. When I show you the demo, I think you'll be completely underwhelmed by how little it does. But what it does do in terms of results is quite big because it enables you to convert your entire package library from 4.6 to 5.0 in a very easy scriptable manner. So it supports bulk conversion. And the other nice thing about it is that it can validate whether a package is suitable for conversion. It'll give you a report. You can run it against your entire library, and it'll give you a report at the end of it that says, hey, these apps are not going to be able to convert. You're not going to be able to convert them. These apps will convert. Packages will convert. But there are some gotchas that you need to watch out for. Let's just go into my first demo and take a look at the package converter. Because I got fat fingers and I hate typing during demos, I've just copied all my commands into a script. I'm going to drive it completely through PowerShell. The first thing we need to do is import the package converter module. And this is something that gets installed as part of the sequencer install process. The package converter is essentially on the sequencer machine, so you'd set up a sequencer station for it. The first commandlet we need to look at is the test legacy appv package. This is the commandlet that's going to tell you whether a package is suitable for conversion. And all it takes is the folder in which the package files are located. And it's actually that quick. You get pretty much instantaneous results that tell you whether or not your package is going to get converted. In this case, we didn't get any errors, which means the package will get converted, but there was a warning. It said, hey, I found an OSD script which I'm not going to be able to convert. So this is something we'll talk about later, but I'm going to go ahead and do the conversion anyway because I don't believe this is essential for the package to run at this point. It's very straightforward to do bulk conversion. All I need to do is save all the package folders that I want to convert into a variable and then pass it to the same commandlet. So in this case, I'm just going to test it. I'm going to pipe the result to the commandlet that's going to give me a slightly prettier result that I can search through. So you could do this for your entire package library, go out to lunch, come back, and you'll have a report that tells you what the status of your package conversion is going to be. So this is what the report looks like. It's the same content, essentially. So what it's telling me is that it didn't find any problems with WinZip. It didn't have errors with Reader 9.4, but it found a OSD script that it can't convert. And the commandlet to do the actual conversion is just this, convert from legacy appv package. I'm going to get this started, and we'll come back to it because it'll take a little bit of time. But that's pretty much it. From a conversion perspective, this is all you really need to do. I sincerely hope that every package conversion experience of yours is this boring, because this is really all I would want from that experience. I put in the commandlets into the deck just for a reference. I'm not going to spend any time over them. So being in the test discipline, I'm normally more interested in things that don't work rather than things that work. Package conversion overall is, from that perspective, is not a high-value feature for me. If you start out with a package that worked in 4.6, chances are it's just going to work without any problems in 5.0. There are a few things to bear in mind, but most of them are really common sense. You need to start with a valid package, which means you need to be able to open it on the sequencer. You need to be able to deploy it to the client, and the application should do what you expect it to do. If you're using packages from pre-4.5 releases, then the standard workaround that we've always had, which is to open the package in 4.6 and save it, will continue to work. You can do that and then run it against the package converter. There are a few limitations, like the one we saw during the conversion. And most of them relate to any customizations that you made to OSDs, because OSDs as a concept is not being carried forward to 5.0. Right? We went from that entire list of SFT, OSD, SPRJ, that was the output of the sequencer, to a single .appv file. We have a different scripting mechanism in 5.0, and it's semantically different, but that's not really the problem. The problem is that we can't really interpret the intention of the script. We can't really there's no way for us to know what your script was trying to do. So because of that, we don't do the conversion automatically. If you had OSD scripts, you're going to have to create new scripts in 5.0. And these scripts would go into one of the configuration files, the deployment config or the user config, which Asim talked about in the overview session. And if your OSD has other conflicting data, if you have multiple OSDs with conflicting data, or if you have conflicting data in the same OSD, then again you will get warnings. So there's a differentiation between warnings and errors. If you get a warning, then the package conversion will still work. It's just something that you need to look out for. You might have additional steps to do later. DSC as a concept, DSC as an implementation has gone away. So DSC configurations will not be converted either. You will need to, again, this is a question of intention, right? You need to figure out what you want to do in terms of connection groups in 5.0, and you'll need to set up those connection groups from scratch. So given how easy this is, why would you ever not do package conversion? Why would you ever prefer sequencing? Now, there are a few reasons why you might want to resequence a package. The biggest one I can think of is if you are not quite happy with the way your application worked in 4.6 and you want it to be more integrated into the OS through one of our new extension points, then in that case, you might want to resequence it. You can't add these extension points to the package post facto. It's something that has to be detected at monitoring time, so you will have to resequence if you want to leverage any of them. So that is actually pretty much all I have to say about package conversion. Just from a content perspective, it's likely that I might get done a little early. So that's why we are all here, because we will take question and answers as a group at the end of the session. The second thing I want to talk about is the coexistence feature. Now, as I said before, we've done work on both the 4.6 product in the SP2 milestone and the 5.0 product to ensure that they can run side by side on the same desktop. And this is so that you can, this will make it possible for you to stage your migration from 4.6 to 5.0. Let me give you a couple of examples to illustrate this. So one thing I can think of is many enterprises are not comfortable with pushing out. If you just converted your packages, you don't really want to push them out into the wild right away. You want to do some degree of testing with them. Some enterprises just do that testing in the lab, but some companies, like Microsoft, will push it out to a controlled set of users. We call that dog food in Microsoft for obvious reasons. So that group of users will get the advanced experience, and you get feedback from them about whether or not it's working out. Coexistence enables this, because you could set up your entire enterprise to have both 4.6 and 5.0 clients. You could convert all your packages to 4.6 and 5.0 and publish them. But through your configuration, you could control which users and or machines get the 5.0 package. So that way, you'll have a controlled set of people that are going to get the package. You can get feedback from them. If they give you a thumbs up, then you can go ahead with the conversion to 5.0. Or if there are problems with the package, then you can actually roll back. And even the rollback is a very straightforward process. The other example I can think of is around Windows 7 migration. If you're in the middle of a Windows 7 migration, you might want to deploy 4.6 and 5.0, and you might want to deploy 5.0 to new clients as you migrate them to Windows 7. However, you still want to control your variables, because you want to be able to isolate between a packaging problem versus a Windows problem. So you could have the 4.6 packages running on Windows 7. When you feel comfortable, you can switch over to the 5.0 package. If you run into any problems in the field, then you could diagnose it by switching them back to a 4.6 package temporarily. That way you can figure out whether it's a Windows problem or a packaging problem. These are things I'm just making up out of my head, but I'm sure there are many scenarios that you could think of that you could use in terms of staging, whether it's from Windows XP to Windows 7 or from 4.6 to 5.0. So let's talk about extensions. A big part of coexistence is figuring out who's going to manage the extension points. In 5.0, we have the concept of a managing authority, which is essentially which of 4.6 or 5.0 is going to own the extension points for a given package. There are a few extension points that are still common between 4.6 and 5.0, shortcuts and file type associations, for instance, right? And we will talk about why this is necessary when we do the demo. But we give you the ability to control which of 4.6 and 5.0 you want managing a particular package. And you can do that at a per package level through deployment configuration or at a per user level through the user configuration. Just a graphic to show coexistence in action. What I'm starting with is a basic 4.6 infrastructure, 4.6 server and client. Out of band, I'm going to do my package conversion to 5.0 and upload all my packages to the 5.0 server. Now, before I can deploy any 5.0 packages, I need to set up coexistence. And the first step there is to upgrade your clients to 4.6 SP2 and then install 5.0 on it. And it has to be done in this order, which I will cover again later. Once this is done, you can update your deployment configuration for each package that you want to publish, you want to migrate to 5.0, and then push the packages out to the client. So let's look at how this works in action. So this is the report from our conversion. It's pretty much the same as the test. But at this point, we have our entire package of 4.6 applications converted, library of 4.6 applications converted to 5.0. I'm going to switch over to the client. Actually, what you're looking at is the web management console for the server. I'm just going to run it from the client just because I can now. So what I have at this point is the reader application. I've added that to the server, but I've not published it yet. So before I publish it, I'm going to edit the default configuration. Go to Advanced. Import. I have a local copy of the deployment configuration, which I'm going to edit. So this is what I want to show you. This is the managing authority. And right now, what it says is 5.0 has been instructed to not take over extensions from 4.6, which means that the managing authority for this set of extensions is going to be 4.6. And there's the package identifier. So I'm going to replace the configuration with this one. And say override. And let me switch over to PowerShell. So there are multiple ways to do this. I can do this through the client console or through PowerShell. I'm just going to start out from PowerShell and then switch over to the console. The first thing we need to do if you're going to use PowerShell is import the AppV client module. And I'm going to enable package scripting, and you'll see why I'm doing this shortly. I need to add the publishing server that I'm going to get that I'm going to get instructions from. And then I'm going to force a publishing refresh. And you can see this in the console. Once the package gets published to us, we should be able to see it. Oh, sorry, I forgot to publish the package. I'm just going to do it from the console this time. At this point, I'm just forcing a publishing refresh. Now we have the reader package that's been published to us. However, since I had stated that I want 4.6 to be the managing authority, at this point, the extensions for reader are still going to be owned by 4.6. I've downloaded the driver's manual for mass state. This is the pop OSD script that we had in the 4.6 file. It's essentially all it's doing is popping up a window. I apologize for the fact that it's such a lame script. I promise in the future we'll try to do something more realistic. The Adobe folks are here, so maybe we'll try and get something real like a print driver or something. Anyway, so I was able to open this PDF with 4.6. Because 4.6 is currently the managing authority. So I'm going to hop back to the server. And change the deployment config again. And this time, I'm going to say, I do want 5.0 to take over extension points from 4.6. And let me force a publishing refresh. Give it a minute or more. All right. And now, if I launch my PDF, you'll notice it's taking a lot more time this time. That's because this is first launch for 5.0, so it needs to stream the entire package down. The 4.6 was already fully cached when I launched it. So we have a different pop-up this time. I've essentially migrated the script over just for completeness to show that it can be done. And I can show you the script in the deployment config. So this time, 5.0 is going to launch the basically 5.0 has the extension points for PDF, and therefore 5.0 is going to launch the PDF. There's a reason I picked the driver's manual, actually. I've been driving in Mass for now in Boston for 3-4 years, and I'm pretty sure people aren't supposed to be actually driving that way, so I want to actually read this manual, make sure. So it should launch momentarily. So the last thing I want to show here is rollback, and we'll do that as soon as the launch actually does happen. It's very straightforward to actually return extension points to 4.6. That's because 5.0 keeps track of extension points. When it takes over an extension point, it keeps track of who last owned it. So if you unpublish the 5.0 application, it's just going to return ownership to whoever last owned it. So let me unpublish. And now if I launch the PDF, it's back to 4.6. So what did we see in the demo? We converted our packages. We upgraded our clients to 4.6 SP2. We installed 5.0. We edited our deployment configuration to instruct 5.0 to take over, and then we published the 5.0 package. At that point, 5.0 took over the extension points and for PDF. Finally, we unpublished the 5.0 package, and 5.0 returned extension points to 4.6. So coexistence, we hope, is a feature that will really help you stage your migration, whether it's in terms of testing your packages before you roll them out, or whether it's in terms of your Windows 7 migration. I just want to talk a little bit about migration in general and how the feature actually works. There is a reason you need to upgrade to 4.6 SP2 before you install 5.0. The 5.0 installer actually checks to see whether SP2 is installed. And if it is installed, it sets a flag called migration mode, sets it to true. And this is in registry. So if migration mode is false, then 5.0 is just going to, when you publish a 5.0 package, it's just going to take over the extension points. And if 4.6 already has, if you have a 4.6 package published, then the two of them are going to be fighting over those extension points. And not necessarily with the result you would expect. Because 5.0 is in some ways the more mature, gentler client. So it actually checks to see whether something has changed on the actual package before it overwrites extension points. 4.6 didn't do that. So every time you did a publishing refresh, it would overwrite your shortcuts and file type associations. So whenever you do a log on or a reboot, 4.6 is going to take over those extension points again. However, when migration mode flag is set to true, the 5.0 client is going to check to see whether who the managing authority is supposed to be. If 4.6 is supposed to be the managing authority, then it's just going to be hands off and say, oh, hey, okay, I don't need to do anything. But if 5.0 is supposed to be the managing authority, if the takeover extension points were set to true, then what it's going to do is send an SFTMIME command to the 4.6 client to say, hey, hands off, I now own these extensions, don't try to take them back. So this is why we really needed to do work on both 4.6 and 5.0. We needed to let 4.6 release the extension points once and for all, right? But this is also why you need to make sure that you do install 5.0 after SP2. Of course, it is possible if you do the order differently, you can manually set the migration mode flag. You just need to set it to 1 in registry, and that will put it in migration mode. All right. So, key takeaways. It just speaks for itself. There is a new package format. This does mean that you need new packages. But with package conversion, it should be really, really easy to convert your existing packages. You should just be able to fire it off, go for lunch, come back, and have a new 5.0 library. AppV only supports Win7 Plus, but with the new coexistence feature, you should be able to stage your migration in an easier manner. There are a couple of contests that we're currently running. There's a package accelerator contest for AppV and a settings template contest for UEV, and we're giving away Xbox 360s to winners. There's more information at that link. Plug for our other sessions. We have one more session on 5.0 still outstanding. That's the B338 PowerShell, and that's going to be in this room at 4 o'clock. So I just want to spend a minute talking about this, about session evaluations, because this is all new content that we are delivering at this point. I expect this session to turn into something about planning and staging your deployment to 5.0 once the product is complete and we have all the white papers in hand that are going to go into making that session. But at this point, it'd be really great if you give us feedback. We might be able to incorporate that and put that into the session. Basically, what do you want to see in this session? That you have a good opportunity to provide inputs on that at this point. So we are going to open it up for question and answers, and I'll invite the rest of the crew to join in. So if you have a question, just step over to the mic so that it gets into the recording.
Does 5.0 have any opportunity to prioritize extensions within 5.0 for multiple apps that have the same file types associated with them?
You want to get that?
So just to make sure I understand the question, so you're asking if two applications use the same, let's say, file type association, can I pick which one will always have it? Great question. So actually, in 5.0, you can't prioritize those types of extensions between applications. So it's last writer wins, which is similar behavior, I think, to 4.6. Connection group? So when you prioritize applications within a connection group, that's really to manage conflicts within the application binaries, right? Because they're in the same virtual environment. So think about like registry settings, right? If two applications in the same connection group have the same registry key, which one do you use? And that's where that priority comes into play. For extensions, which is something like file type associations, right now we're still doing last writer wins, but that's something that's been on our radar, so.
But yeah, this is something that you can address at packaging, because you can delete those file type associations from the package for the other packages. So you can get this behavior. There's just no way to.
I understand what you're saying. We've used AppV as a great tool for our users to sort of be able to evaluate new versions of products. But so they may have a couple different versions of a product that are running, and then they get confused and frustrated because they want to double click on an app, and then they want control. And I was just thinking it would be something in that in the publishing document that comes back to the client with all the list of apps, there'd be a way that you could set a priority in there so that then the client would carry out its FTA registrations.
We hear the feedback, and when we were thinking about designing 5.0, there are really two. When this feature actually came up, there were two issues. I think one is, you know, native applications do have this issue, right? You know, if they share the same extension, which order you install them is kind of the way it works. The other thing is, we were very conscious in 5.0 about when we build new features about making them really easy to manage. You know, typically we add all these features, and you're like, how do I manage this, right? So if we added some sort of priority queuing for extension points, while that gives you a lot more flexibility, that also gives you another thing you have to manage now, right? You've got five apps that have a whole set of priorities, and which one's one, which one's two, and how do you reorder them, right? So it's something we're looking into, and I think when we nail the right experience so we don't give you too many knobs to turn, you'll see it in the product. But for right now, it's the same as 4.6.
Now that the AppV has a new file format, which is essentially a zip file, can I also edit the zip file? Like if I wanted to update a file or add a file during the packaging stage, because you don't want to do that after you've got it into production, but or would that break the AppV file?
So great question. So the question is, you know, we're using a new kind of zip container for the package format. So now that you can go and see easily what's in the package, can I go ahead and edit it? So the short answer is no. So the reason why is when we edit that file, we have to go and, you know, re-archive it, and there's checksums and all that good stuff. So that's where the sequencer comes in and writes it. So if you go in and edit some file in there, you just can't go and close the zip file because you've got to essentially re-zip it, right? So you can open it up in the sequencer and edit it. It's a good piece of feedback, and we're working on, you know, looking into ways in the future where you could have those scenarios.
Because now with the sequence, it's quite complex. If you forget to add one file, you've got to completely reopen it, start the capturing process again just to add one file.
Yeah, I think in this release, we're really trying to focus on just getting people over to the new format.
Right.
The fact that it's open is now you can go easily access stuff. The fact that we use NTFS in the client is big, so you don't have to go into this FSD file. I think in the future, we're going to look into how do I make editing of packages easier, right? I think a lot of the feedback we've heard from you guys is, you know, we've been putting a lot of effort into making sequencing easier. I think one of the things you want is don't have me use the sequencer at all, which I think is kind of what you're heading towards. So we hear the feedback, and we're looking into it.
Okay, thank you.
So I think I saw a recommendation in 5.0 that said you, on your sequencer, you still want to have two drives in your sequencer machine, like one for your primary OS and one for when you're doing an install or whatever. It doesn't matter if it's Q or not, I understand. But am I right on that, or is that not an issue? Basically now with the sequencer in 5.0, you just do a regular what would have been a VFS install prior, right. But now it's just let it install natively.
Yeah. So there's no Q drive. There's no mounted drive. You don't have to do any of that stuff in the sequencer. I mean, some of the best practices should still be adhered to. So make sure your sequencer image reflects your client image, right? Mm-hmm. And you still get to choose a directory where you install the app.
Yeah.
If you don't install the app there, then we'll VFS everything.
Yeah.
You still want a package root. So
yeah.
But you don't need a separate drive.
Yeah. So that package root is basically you tell it where you're going to install the app. The difference is you don't have to worry about, you know, the Q drive and all that. That's good.
So your package root can now still be C program files.
Yeah.
So, yep.
Yeah.
Yes.
I see what you're saying.
With 5.0, do you have any enhanced scripting ability to be able to run a script elevated, not as the user that's logged on?
Yes.
Repeat the question.
So you want to know about launching scripts from as elevated? I believe there is. If you just come up to the front after this, I can confirm that for you.
Okay. Thank you.
Have you changed the way of rolling back from if you have upgraded an application to a new version on the server and then you want to roll it back? In 4.6, you had a lot of problems with OSD files still pointing to the new version of the files. So in 5.0, you don't have OSD files. So is it easier to roll back to a version prior to that one?
So the question is, you know, it sounds like in 4.6 when you upgraded a package and then you wanted to roll back, you're seeing some issues where the OSD files were still not being or still pointing to the upgraded version or still having metadata from the upgraded version. Is that the question?
Yes.
Okay. I can't say that I've seen that issue. I can tell you. I mean, so we still support upgrade and downgrade. So using our server or any other management tool, right, you can still upgrade packages and downgrade. Typically, we find that when you upgrade a package, you don't have to go and change the deployment configuration or user configuration. I can't think of any scenarios where you would have to. I think this is one of those situations where this is a very specific issue that you may have seen. I think we just have to go and try it and see if you're still seeing that issue. But we, in our own internal testing, we've never seen issues where, you know, when you upgrade a package and update a configuration file and then you revert it back, we should revert everything back, right?
Theoretically, you shouldn't see it because you only have a single file at this point. There are no external references. So if you just replace the .appv file with another .appv file, it should be OK. It shouldn't be a problem.
I have a question in regards to connection groups. Is there a report where I can see which connection group a package is assigned to? And can I also easily replace those packages in those connection groups for multiple packages?
Yeah. So if you in our server UI, if you go and so the question was, is there an easy way to go and view which connection groups a package belongs to? So if you go into our new server UI and you click on a package, in the bottom you'll see various properties like who the package is assigned to. There's also a field there that tells you all the connection groups it belongs to as well. And then you can click on any of those connection groups and it takes you there and you can make updates. We're looking in the future of making that even easier and providing more shortcuts, but today I think it's much improved from 4.6. Yeah.
Thank you.
I haven't added it to a connection group, so I could have shown you that.
So, I'm sorry. Were you going to go first?
I'll have him go first, then you.
So it sounds like you guys are hitting up against a lot of limitations to the OS, registry issues, maybe some memory space, but it sounds like we've got a lot of limitations what we can do with the registry in terms of like the file association problem. Are you guys able to influence what Microsoft's doing with future OSs to make them work better with application virtualization, or are we as far as we can go right now?
Well, we are definitely part of Microsoft, which means we do get to influence and have parts of those conversations. Doesn't mean I get to make all the decisions because it's a different set of people, but we do work with the Windows team and provide feedback to them about what we're trying to do and what makes sense to us. And you know, in some cases, it's about expectations. Like the FTA one in particular is we're trying to make apps more like native apps, right? So to some degree, it's that question of, okay, we want to make it just like everything else. And sometimes you get into situations where it's not a good situation. So we have to make some decisions about how we want to deal with those and move those forward. But in some cases, we'll go do stuff to sort of move those forward. In other places, we'll try to influence the larger operating system or other parts of Microsoft to move in the right direction. Like I would say our partnership, we can't talk about right now, but part of our partnership with Office over the years with the Office 2010 deployment kit is about a conversation with them like, hey, how can you make Office work better with that V, right?
So I haven't seen anything demoed so far with 5.0 on reporting, so, you know, like application utilization. That's one of the things that's been really important in our organization is that we've, you know, our application owners want to know, you know, when they get ready to upgrade from version 4 to version 5 of whatever app, they'd like to know, you know, what is the utilization of the application? Is that going to be something that's will continue to be available, and if so, I don't see it in the console here, so maybe it's going to be on a back end in the server or someplace. Will you publish that information about how we can go and do queries based on utilization?
So I guess all I'll say at this point is that 5.0 is still in early beta. The product itself is not complete. We are continuing to work on the product. But it's good feedback that reporting is an important feature to you. This is something that we have heard before, obviously.
Stay tuned. You told us just Windows 7 Plus is supported with 5.0. What about terminal server support running apps on a terminal server? Will it be supported in future too with 5.0? Running appv packages on a terminal server.
Yes, it is supported in 5.0.
Yeah.
And it should be an easier experience as well because you can just manage everything through remote app. Remote app works seamlessly.
Yeah, because of the extension points, like Dilip said, so remote apps now work just out of the box. The other thing I don't think we've actually mentioned in any of the sessions is that the new 5.0 architecture allows for multiple different users on a, you know, an RDS machine to actually run different versions of the package at the same time. A lot of times when you upgrade a package, you had to kind of bleed people off the machine and then upgrade the package and then get everyone back on. And you don't have to worry about that now. So just FYI.
Is there a 2008
minimum on that? Is it 2008 or 2008 R2 that we're supposed to? 2008 R2 is the minimal. Yep.
Connection groups, are they configured similarly to DSC at package time, or can you configure them in the management console?
Yeah. So the question is, connection groups, can you configure them at package add time, or
no, at the time you're packaging, like at DSC?
Oh, I see.
You've got to configure that when you're packaging the application.
Yeah.
Or can you manage it in the console now?
Sure. So we made the decision in 5.0 that
He's asking if you can manage it on the console. You
can manage it on the console, right? That's what I was getting to. So you can see there, you can go and create all the connection groups you want. You can also, so the connection group is essentially just an XML file. It's very simple. So it's just the name of the connection group along with the package IDs of the packages you need in that connection group. So you can actually create that by hand, pretty straightforward manner. So if you're, you know, a sequencing engineer or packager, and you know more about the app, you can create that file pretty quickly, and then from there you can, you know, give it to, you can actually apply it directly to the client. If you go to the session later on PowerShell, we'll show you how you can apply connection groups not only from the server but also directly to the client using PowerShell.
So. But at present, the primary experience is through the management console. Yeah. So through.
All right. Well, it's different because in the past it was very difficult to add a new application to the a new plugin to an application. You'd have to open the OSDs, change them, and then.
Yeah. So all of that is much, much simpler. It's straight. It's in the. It's a first class citizen in the management console UI.
Great.
So in the. So
that's great.
Should be much easier.
Okay. Will that also be something that you in the future can manage through SCCM? Is that something you're thinking about, or is that too
Stay
early?
Tuned.
Okay.
Sorry.
In one of the other sessions, you mentioned briefly that you have a collaboration with Adobe. I was wondering, what can we expect from that, and are you looking into other collaborations with other vendors?
Well, we can't announce anything now, and I'm sure the Adobe folks sitting in the audience will appreciate it. We're still working with it. We'll work with any vendors that we can that want to come to us. Obviously, we've worked with internally at Microsoft, work with Office. There's more to come on that. Adobe's, you know, it's something we're exploring and working through right now. If there's other ones that come to us that are important, we'll work with them as well. I mean, I guess my question to the audience would be, who do you want us to work with? What is the app that you really, you know, would want us to get that in, that sort of tight sort of optimization with that be with? And is there any particular one? Anyone would volunteer? Ask the question.
Well, your own Internet Explorer would be a very nice one to be able to.
You just set us up for that one. You really did.
So on 5.0, when the end user, we're using an environment that is exclusively AD groups. We're not using Configuration Manager to push to clients. But one of the things that I was a little disappointed in when 4.6 came out was the idea that when you publish the app and you launch it the first time, that FSD actually took the whole amount of space on the hard drive. Is that still the case in 5.0, or are you going to have to stream basically the entire app down the first time, or is there still a primary feature block and a secondary feature block, and how does that work?
Sure, there's a lot in that question. So the first question, part of the question, I think, was around...
I can add more.
I'll try to answer as much as I can. So the first question was, part of it was around, we pre-allocated in 4.6, right? So as soon as you publish down the app, we in the cache, we took up however many gigs that the package took. So in 5.0, we're just using NTFS, so there is no cache, essentially. So when we first push down the package, everything... We will lay down all the files, but they're all sparse files. And so, you know, we're not going to pre-allocate anything. We're not doing any of that kind of cache management stuff in 5.0. Your second part of the question was around, you know, feature blocks. That's still there. So you can still optimize your package for streaming. and we'll still stream down, you know, feature block one if you've got one, and we'll page things in the background. We'll do background streaming. That's all still there.
Is there any cleanup configuration you can add when you're upgrading versions? If you go from a complete version 1 package to a new version 2 package, is there anything in place with 5.0 that you can clean up version 1 without actually, you know, going and manually deleting off the client?
Okay, so the question is, when you upgrade a package from, you know, V1 to V2, is there a way to kind of clean up what was in V1? Is that like, are you talking about from like a, you know, just a disk utilization point of view?
You're just for like space on the hard drive.
Sure. So, so when if you're using streaming, when you upgrade to V2, we only stream the deltas. So, when you have V2, you should really not be using any extra space, right? So there shouldn't be any reason to clean anything up in that case. If you're not using streaming, if you're just pushing packages down, like I said, all of our package data is now in NTFS, so it's pretty easy to write a script or use any basic Windows management tool to go clean up the old directory. It's just literally an old, you'll see two directories, V1, V2. Once you push down V2 and you've loaded it fully in cache, you could delete V1. But again, if you're using streaming, it shouldn't be an issue for you.
Okay, thanks.
Oh, yeah. So just to add on to that question, the PowerShell guru reminded me, you don't have to actually go and manually delete. We have a commandlet called remove package that will actually delete it for you. So, and in that commandlet, you can actually specify which version. So if you have V1 and V2, just say remove this package V1, and it's gone.
Going back to the file type associations, if you have like a conflict and there's a file that you want to open, sometimes you do a right click and you can open with, and you would select just the system tray, the ABI tray, and then you have to scroll through the list. Is that still how that's going to work, or will you actually see the applications listed there that are associated and you can then select it at that time?
So exactly as you said, you see the application that you would expect to see. There is no tray in the middle. So if you have Office, for instance, you'll see Word in the open with, not the tray.
OK, good. Are you guys going to continue to work with Flexera to integrate with the 5.0 in their future Admin Studio releases? And will it be better?
They have to speak to them about their products, but we'll definitely continue to partner with them.
If you actually go talk to the Flexera people today, they had a press release this week that talked about their future plans.
Okay. Next. I know it looks like they're kind of going away, but in the past, whenever we've had to sequence an MMC console, we've had to pre-capture the snap and registry keys in order to make it to work. Is that still something that we're going to have to do? I mean, like I said, I know a lot of them are going away. Specifically, like with the SCCM 07 console, we had to go back and capture the registry keys and then inject them into the package. Does App V5's capabilities get around that, or is that still something that we would probably have to do?
I think the right answer is we don't know. We have to.
Yeah, we haven't tried that yet, but the beta's out. We'd appreciate the feedback. but in all seriousness, we re-architected a lot of the virtualization subsystems in the sequencer. So obviously, like Dilip mentioned, the UI and the workflow is still pretty much the same, but underneath, the guts are very different. And they're much truer to, the Windows standards. So, part of this is, getting this out in the field and getting your feedback, and we can make adjustments. So, I know it's not the greatest answer, but as soon as you can give us some feedback, the sooner we can take it and try to make updates.
Okay.
If there's a specific console that that you're interested in, send me mail. We have a list of compared applications that we normally test with. It's a list I'm not going to publish, but we have a list, and I'll just add it to that so that we can test longer.
Okay. And then the big bad word, drivers. hardware drivers. I'm guessing it's still not in the realm. Nobody wants to answer?
It's the same as 4.6. So if you have drivers, we will, the sequencer, as in 4.6 SP1, mm-hmm. will tell you that you had drivers that you have to deploy manually. Again, you can, if you want to lay them down natively, you can use the scripting, or you can just put it on your image.
OK. Thank you.
You know, something that just occurred to me is it might be an interesting idea, and it's probably in your design requests or change requests or whatever, but if the AbbVie sequencer can detect that you've had drivers installed, wouldn't it be nice if they could, if you could actually in the sequencer then isolate those drivers and give us a nice package to be able to do that with? Because there are vendors out there that just don't seem to make it very easy to pull out the drivers and figure out how to mount them. So there's an interesting request. I don't know if it's something you guys have ever considered doing, but and it would be, of course, unsupported by the vendors, naturally, because they're not going to want you to do it that way. But it would help us as the administrators who have to deploy these apps.
They don't support that AbbVie package.
Tell me about it.
It's definitely worth thinking about. I think there's a difference in complexity in detection of the driver and actually figuring out everything that surrounds it in order to be able to install it. But yeah, it's something that put on.
But you guys have great minds up there. You can figure out how to do that.
ODBC from within a package, could that be published outside so it could be used from native from application installed natively on the OS?
Could you repeat the question? I'm not sure.
If we sequence a package with, the example, Oracle ODBC drivers or MySQL ODBC drivers, could that ODBC source be published from outside so the application on the machine could see these ODBC sources? But that's like drivers.
So in your ODBC drivers, you want it to be inside the package
and available from outside, yeah.
And you should be able to just connect to it from outside, right? That's the scenario?
Yeah. So
or it needs to make outbound connections to your backend.
Example applications that is using an ODBC to go to the database. From outside the package, you could use Excel also to get the same data. But the Excel on the machine don't know about the ODBC that is inside the package.
Okay, so that's that would in effect be a new kind of subsystem and a new extension point. It's not something that we've necessarily considered for the desktop product per se. On the server app we said we have talked about ODBC drivers on and off, but yeah, it's something. It's good feedback. It's. If there are specific apps that you can share with us that make this necessary and that we could actually look at, probably it might be more useful. But it's currently we don't support it.
Take it. It's a good idea.
Yeah.
Okay, so one other question that had just occurred to me was not to offend anybody in the room who may be here from Adobe, but. What are you still in 5.0 going to be? You can still capture a Windows service into the package, but when you actually publish it to the client, it actually publishes it to the host, so that you can't have more than one of the same service running at the same time. So we had that issue because we didn't virtualize Adobe Acrobat Pro, but we were virtualizing other elements of the Creative Suite, so. We had some issues because Acrobat Pro wanted to have one copy of the FlexNet licensing service installed locally, and then our package had one also. That would always cause the package to crash because the service wouldn't be able to run or insert itself, and then it wouldn't be able to read. So we're still going to be limited to that. There's only one copy of every uniquely named service.
So yeah, yes. Unfortunately, it's the same as 4.6. So you'll each service will end up
first one in.
The first one in Melbourne, basically, or the last one in Melbourne.
So, do you have any release dates for Service Pack 2 and 5.0?
No. but you know, as soon as we have that information, we'll give it to you guys. But right now, we can't say much. Sorry. But
they still need to take feedback.
Yeah. I mean, because we're still early in the beta at this point, we're still gathering feedback, and we still have development milestones too. So. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. We really do take your feedback seriously, not only here, but we're always looking on Connect as well. So, yeah, definitely.
Right now we deploy with the MSI packages. So is there a possibility to deploy a connection group XML with the MSI, or do I have to do this with PowerShell?
So yeah, either through the server management that will just publish it to the client, or through PowerShell, there is no, we don't generate an MSI for the connection group.
And right now we're early in beta stage, but can we expect in a beta 2 or so something with the shell extensions, perhaps in combination with Windows 8? I hope the answer is stay tuned.
But there are more milestones.
Do you do anything more with shortcut cleanup? So like the remnants of a shortcut, for example, most recently used, get it populated to a list. So then when you uninstall the app, that stays behind. The users are like, I'm clicking on this, but it's not working. Anything more with that?
Yeah, so for shortcuts, so when you unpublish, for sure, we remove your shortcuts. Yeah. Yeah, right, so that's there. But I think there's another part of it. I think your question.
Well, yeah, I mean that's the main one. But then
in your Roman user profile and stuff.
Well, there's the Roman user profile is one of our problem. The other is that after you use it, it goes to the start menu.
Oh, yes.
Like the most recently used or whatever it is.
That should go away now.
Okay. All right. Good.
And if are you in the tap? Because anything that's left behind, you should just file as a bug. I think. It's
okay. Yeah. All right. And of course, they'll probably copy it to their desktop too, but you can't get them all, right?
Any other final questions?
All right.
We hope to see you at 4 p.m. this afternoon to talk about PowerShell and FP5.0. So thanks for coming.
Thanks, everyone.